Are we ready?
Yes, we are.
Woo! We're back to hiding behind a closed door in the hope that we don't hear any knocks at the door or any dramas while we record.
We have kids.
Hmm.
There's nothing else we can say.
Yeah, yeah. I'm sure
we have children.
Yeah, I'm sure other people with children will know the joy of trying to do stuff that doesn't involve them when they're still, you know, awake.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, yes.
Yeah.
Oh, God.
Not really much to talk about tonight, is there?
No, it's, I'm not going to say anything about the weather.
Oh, you told me I couldn't even mention the weather.
Oh, God. Oh.
It's a balmy evening. Now, let's get on with the podcast.
Epic fail. Epic fail.
Fail. What the... Hello and welcome to the What the History podcast, your fortnightly bits of bizarre history that will make you say, what the history? I am Trevor Holland.
And I'm Susie Holland.
And in a bit of a special, it's not really a special episode, but it's something
it's always different. Special. Every episode is special.
That is true, but tonight we actually have stories that are somewhat related, which I'm glad about because it's going to make my segue really, really easy.
And we didn't plan it this way either. It just sort of happened. Yeah. I didn't even know I was going to do this subject until I went, you know what? I want to find out about this. So I'm going to tell you guys all about this.
Ooh.
This being, okay, I'm going to set the scene. Another set the scene one. You guys love this, I know. Picture a Sunday night in America around 8 p.m. in 1938. Okay, you got that? Cool. Families sitting around the old familiar and friendly radio, listening to sitcoms, radio serials, and various advertisements. Dad sitting in his easy chair with a pipe and a cup of tea. The kids are playing with toys on the floor, and Mum's having a quiet sit down, or still bustling around the kitchen, or maybe having a sneaky wine. I know which one I'd probably be doing. Most people that night were listening to a ventriloquist by the name of Edgar Bergen and his dummy, Charlie McCarthy, on the radio station NBC. And after Edgar's show was over, some switched over to CBS, another radio station. What they were listening to shocked them to the core. They were listening to an eyewitness account of a Martian invasion in New Jersey. What the indeed.
Mm.
What they were really listening to was a radio dramatization of 23-year-old actor and director Orson Welles and his fellow actors from the Mercury Theatre reading H.G. Wells' book War of the Worlds, and a dramatization based on that. But those who didn't turn over to CBS until 8:12 p.m. didn't know that, as Orson had begun at 8 p.m. and he had clearly advised his listeners that it was a dramatization and not to be taken seriously. In fact, the announcer introducing the dramatization states, and I quote, "The Columbia Broadcasting System and its affiliated stations present Orson Welles and the Mercury Theatre on the air in War of the Worlds by H.G. Wells," end quote. Intro music plays, and then Orson began reading from the script, which was taken from the book. The dramatization is interrupted by an announcer reading a weather report for some reason, and then the announcer advised the listener that they are cutting to the Meridian Room at the Park Plaza Hotel in downtown New York, where they were going to be entertained by the music of Ramon Riccello and his orchestra. Then the announcer interrupted the music to bring in a report from the Intercontinental Radio News of an object hurtling through the sky from the direction of the planet Mars, and it's coming towards Earth. The music begins again and is interrupted by the announcer asking the observatories to keep an eye on Mars. More music plays, and then an interview with top astronomer Professor Pearson of Princeton University, who advises listener that the chances of any living intelligence on Mars is 1,000 to 1. The interview is interrupted by yet another bulletin advising that 3 explosions have been noticed on Mars, and the listener hears about a meteorite crashing into a farm in Grover's Mill, New Jersey. More music plays, and then the listener gets taken to Grover's Mill, to Wilmoth Farm, where the eyewitness account tells that there is something half buried in a pit, looking like a huge cylinder and not a meteorite, with a humming emanating from the inside. Then we have the clincher. The lid of the object is removed by what's inside, and two big black eyes and silver tentacles are seen by terrified onlookers. More tragic music, and I do mean tragic, is interrupted by the reporter Carl Phillips, who is now hiding behind the wall at Wilmer's farm and watching the scene, and sees an object rising up out of the pit, hurling flames towards two men who are standing nearby the pit, and soon the whole place is on fire. The last words the listener hears is Phillips shouting, "Now the whole field's caught fire, the woods, the barns, the gas tanks of automobiles. It's spreading everywhere. It's coming this way, about 20 yards to my right." And then the sound of the microphone crashing down, and then nothing. Dead silence. So you're a listener and you've heard all that, not knowing that it was a dramatization, and knowing that your good buddy, your radio, wouldn't lie to you, you understandably start freaking out. This has been all you have listened to for the past 15 minutes. If you're still listening and haven't got your family in makeshift shelters or in hiding, it's announced at around 24 minutes and 42 seconds into the broadcast that the objects are from the planet Mars and intent on invasion. You notice your neighbours gathering outside with wet towels over them in case of a gas attack, some screaming, some calling the police, some getting into their cars, and lots of confusion. Armies attack the aliens, only to be useless, with a now-named heat ray, as per the eyewitness accounts, surrounding Wilmer's farm, and now the Martians were out of their cylinders and on the move. It's gone down in history, but by the next day, happy Halloween, this broadcast made Orson Welles a household name and the most talked about in America, due to the mass hysteria from the radio listeners who didn't get the memo that it was a dramatization. There are outcries of how something so frightening should not be on radio, with many people allegedly being interviewed from all over America about what listening to the dramatization had done to them and their families. This ranged from the person who told the New York Times, which carried the headline, "Radio Listeners in Panic, Taking War Drama as Fact, Many Flee Homes to Escape Gas Raid from Mars, Phone Calls Swamp Police at Broadcast of Wells Fantasy." And these reports, one of them said that a woman in Indianapolis raced into a church and interrupted the service screaming, "New York destroyed! It's the end of the world! You might as well go home to die! I just heard it on the radio!" to various people expressing indignation, summed up by Warren Dean of the American Legion, who told the New York Times, and I quote, "I've heard a lot of radio programs, but I've never heard anything as rotten as that. It was too realistic for comfort. They broke into a dance program with a news flash. Everyone in my house was agitated by the news. It went on just like press radio news." End quote. Some churches held end-of-the-world prayer meetings, and a person from Ohio asked the New York Times switchboard, "What time will it be at the end of the world?" Which I thought was a bit strange.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, and the aliens are going to attack at about 9:05. Okay, everyone. Okay, back to a quote here from Samuel Tishman from Queens. He allegedly commented, "I came home at 9:15 p.m. just in time to receive a telephone call from my nephew, who was frantic with fear. He told me the city was about to be bombed from the air and advised me to get out of the building at once. I turned on the radio and heard the broadcast, which corroborated what my nephew had said. Grabbed my hat and coat and a few personal belongings and ran to the elevator. When I got to the street, there were hundreds of people milling around in panic. Most of us ran towards Broadway, and it was not until we stopped taxi drivers, who had heard the entire broadcast on their radios, that we knew what it was all about. It was the most asinine stunt I had ever heard of." End quote. Now, apparently there are also stories of suicide attempts and people jumping off buildings to escape the alleged invasion, and also people being treated for shock at nearby hospitals. So we get the widespread panic, and Orson Welles commenting afterwards in amazement, and I quote, "We've been putting on all sorts of things, from the most realistic situations to the wildest fantasy, but no one ever bothered to get serious about them before. We just can't understand why this should have got such an amazing reaction. It's too bad that so many people got excited, but after all, we kept reminding them that it wasn't true. People were wanting to shoot Orson on sight, and he was everywhere, and he just made the cover of Time magazine a few months before. He was more famous or infamous than ever." But what if the reports of the widespread panic were untrue? The dramatization told the listeners four times during the almost hour-long broadcast that it was simply a dramatization of the book, and I know because I listened to the whole thing, and it's really cool. Okay, but back to my story here. In the 2000s, historians and sociologists were looking into the mass hysteria claims, and in 2010, Professor of Communication Studies at American University in Washington, D.C., W. Joseph Campbell, stated that the news coverage of the event was, and I quote, "almost entirely anecdotal and largely based on sketch wire service roundups, that the news coverage of the event emphasized breadth over in-depth detail," end quote. This means that even then, media was being used to frighten people. Campbell also wrote a book called Getting It Wrong and found that most newspapers dropped the story after a day or two. To back up this claim, the C.E. Hooper ratings state that only 2% of the population were listening to the dramatization and knew it to be a production, not fact. For the reports that people were taken to hospital for shock, etc. after the dramatization, a report done on 6 hospitals in the New Jersey area, not one hospital had any record of people being brought there to be treated on account of the dramatization. So, why did the newspapers make such a big deal out of it? Simply put, the newspaper articles told loyal Americans that radio was not to be trusted and it was an irresponsible form of media, with the newspapers trying to censor their competitor. The newspapers didn't like the radio taking revenue from them for advertising and news stories which happened during the Depression, so what better way to discredit radio news than to go after them and drum up mass hysteria? And what did Orson get out of this? A Hollywood career starting with Citizen Kane, awards, and the rest is what the history.
Absolutely, what the history.
Yeah, indeed. Oh, I thought that this was so interesting. It was, yeah, I went in there going, okay, I know all about the mass hysteria. I just wanted to research it. And then I find that it was just a beat up.
Mm-hmm.
And the newspapers were going after radio because it was a relatively new media at that stage. And, you know, they just didn't like radio taking money off them. So, bang.
Mm-hmm. And newspapers would never stoop to anything
no.
like a fake news broadcast or
fake
presentation.
News.
Fake news!
Fake news!
Oh, well, let's just say that's a pretty good segue over
oh, yeah.
to my topic.
Oh, that was really good.
It was so easy tonight. After the last few times being so difficult finding a segue, it's just like so easy.
Booyah.
So, back in the 1870s, newspapers fought hard for the eyes and cash of the news-reading consumer. One of the most ferocious combatants was the New York Herald. The publisher of the newspaper was James Gordon Bennett Jr., a man not afraid to spend extra money to get news directly from the transatlantic telegraph line, and was even the financier for Henry Stanley's famous quest to find Dr. Livingstone in Africa.
I presume
indeed. Bennett strictly controlled what was published in the New York Herald, and so would have fully approved of the lead story of the edition that hit the streets on Monday, 9th of November in 1874. First, the newsboys distributing the paper screamed out the headlines. "Awful calamity" was splashed across the page, followed by "a shocking Sabbath carnival of death." The public quickly purchased the freshly pressed papers to find out more. The story on page 3, the first two pages of newspapers at the time were dedicated to advertisements, so essentially it was a front page story, told a gruesome tale of a mass escape of animals from the Central Park Zoo, or menagerie, as it was referred to at the time. According to the story, written by Thomas Connery, a zookeeper had been trying to move a rhinoceros by prodding it with a stick through the bars of its cage. Provoked and enraged, the rhino smashed out of its confines, killing the keeper, before stampeding off and smashing through cages of other animals. At the first whiff of freedom, animals immediately ran and scattered throughout the city, causing chaos wherever they went, and the newspaper did not worry about toning down the details. Now, some examples, and I've got three separate examples from the story, in the following quotes. Number one. Backing down from the mangled body with a swiftness almost incredible from his bulk, the rhinoceros plunged his horrid horn into the dead keeper. Second quote. The panther was crouched over Highland's body, gnawing horribly at his head. I recognised his body by the striped shirt, which I could just see hanging tattered from the arm. And the final quote about a not determined animal is, men and women rushed in all directions away from the beast, who sprang upon the shoulders of an aged lady, burying his fangs in her neck and carrying her to the ground.
Could it be Dracula?
I'm assuming it's some sort of cat. Anyway.
Sorry.
The details of the incident kept building up with accounts of a lion and tiger fighting on 59th Street. An anaconda was trying to eat a giraffe. A group of Swedish hunters were tracking a lioness that had already killed someone. A rare Bengal tiger had been shot, and another tiger was causing more death and destruction after it had jumped onto a ferry. The paper made no qualms about stating animals were still at large, and their inability to keep track of the numbers of injured, dying, and dead swamping the hospitals. They weren't vague about victims and eyewitnesses, though, giving names, sexes, and ages of those who had succumbed to the ferocious beasts or witnessed the events. Comments about police armed with revolvers and people trapped and encircled were printed in bold, all-caps type, and the story was updated in later editions of paper during the day. At the end of the article, in small type, was the following. Quote, of course, the entire story given above is pure fabrication. Not one word of it is true. Not a single act or incident described has taken place. It is a huge hoax, a wild romance, or whatever other epithet of utter untrustworthiness our readers may choose to apply to it. It is simply a fancy picture which crowded upon the mind of the writer a few days ago while he was gazing through the iron bars of the cages of the wild animals in the menagerie at Central Park. End quote. So happy ending, right? Wrong. Funnily enough, not many people, including workers at the New York Herald, had read the entire story before reacting. Men dropped the paper to hurry to their homes and arm themselves for protection against the beasts. Other papers dispatched reporters, also armed, to catch up on the breaking story. Parents kept their children home from schools and rushed to police stations demanding updates and appropriate responses. It was reported that even the editor of the New York Times was spotted leaving his home brandishing dual pistols and ready for anything.
That New York Times.
As the truth came out and the armed mobs retired from the streets, the reaction to the article was not very positive. Other papers condemned the New York Herald. The New York Times printed letters from readers who claimed they had been terrified and stated that the article was a, and I quote, intensely stupid and unfeeling hoax, end quote, and that if, quote, charming sketches of dead children and dying old ladies do not move the reader to roars of laughter, his sense of fun must be somewhat different from that which the proprietor or editor of the New York Herald has been endowed.
Ooh.
End quote. The Galveston Daily News added, quote, Bennett had better recall Stanley from the interior of Africa. He is the crack lion shot of the Herald establishment and should be at home to protect it. End quote. The New York Times even teamed up with a group of concerned citizens and paid a visit to the district attorney's office to find out if any charges could be laid against the Herald for its irresponsible behaviour. A promise was made to investigate, but no charges were ever laid. As for the New York Herald, they expressed surprise at the reaction and followed up with an article titled Wild Beasts, which pushed for improvements to safety standards at the zoo. The Herald did not see any appreciable changes in sales figures from their hoax. However, improvements were made to increase the security and safety at the zoo. So I guess you can say this was a slight win to be remembered in What the History.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that actually seems like that was a genuine panic as opposed to the made-up panic from War of the Worlds.
That's right.
Absolutely. And so if you want to find out more about that, you can check out our references.
Yes, I have lots of them.
All the links are just down below in the podcast description, unless you're watching this on YouTube, in which case there will be a link to a page with the links.
You'll see all those wonderful pictures and photos of Orson getting right into his delivery. His photos look so passionate.
And if you would like to get in touch with us, it's super duper easy. You can head to our homepage, wthpod.rufusproject.com, and leave a comment below this episode. You can find the What the History podcast page on Facebook. We're at pod_what on Twitter, or use the hashtag WTHpod, or send us an email to wthpod@rufusproject.com. We would love to hear from you.
We would.
Yes. We love hearing from people.
We love you guys.
It's awesome. I love responding to people on Facebook.
I do.
Yeah.
You know, I do it as well.
I know.
You know, people liking my photo. Thank you for those who liked my photo.
It's a lovely photo. So, on that note, we hope you have enjoyed tonight's episode. And we will be back in a couple of weeks' time with two more bizarre bits of history to make you say,
What the history? Good night, everyone.
Catch you later. Chances of anything.